Welcome to the Phil Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:28 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 6th. I thought we'd kick off today with Japan because it is a focus for exporters, for companies that are dependent on Chinese supply of intermediate components for a number of different industries. And then the second section has bounced very impressively over the course of this week. It did really fantastically well between 2017 and early 2018. Then it pulled back very sharply. And subsequently, it has been recovering now over the course of the last 12 months. The 200-day moving average has now turned back upwards. The index has found support in the region of the trend mean. And this week's upward dynamic is really very encouraging. But what's interesting is the degree of bearishness that we're seeing out there. And obviously, a lot of it has to do with China. But the second section has been a reliable lead indicator for the Japanese market for as long as I've been writing for this service, which is coming up on 17 years. So the reality here is that there are obviously considerations that are worthy of our attention. And that is in no part, in no small part, due to the fact that we have major uncertainties because of the coronavirus. But I think there is an important point here. When we look at stock markets, investors are voting with their feet. The Nikkei was up another 500 points in here today. It is within just a couple of hundred points of breaking out of a two-year range. When we look at the Europe Stocks 600, then it was also up in a dynamic manner this week, and it is sustaining the breakout from above the 400-point level. And when we go back and look at a lot of back history here, well, we can see that 400 has been a meaningful area of resistance since the year 2000. And when we see 20-year ranges being resolved on the upside, it's hard not to conclude that we're back in a demand-dominated environment and that this is a new bull market. That's equally true of the FTSE 100. It broke out earlier, and it hasn't quite yet been able to complete this three-year first step above the base. But at least it is in positive territory in here. I think the more perhaps encouraging factor here is that the FTSE 100 has spent a good long time going sideways, and that has been during a period of really quite exceptional political uncertainty in the UK. The fact that the index is starting to steady again, but more importantly that it has held the 7,000 point level, is, I think, encouraging. And when we look at the FTSE 250, then the rebound that we've seen just over the last couple of days is at least supportive of the view that this is a consolidation in the region of a previous peak. What's, I think, rather interesting is that breakouts from these lengthy trading ranges on the FTSE 250 have generally been sustained, but that when they eventually roll over, they do pull back into the underlying trading range. That was the case certainly in 2015 and 16, and again it was the case in 2018 as well, where we did pull back into the underlying range. But then the breakouts from these consolidations have been really quite impressive, and what that would suggest is that the breakout on the FTSE 250 should be sustained. Well, what that does, I think, help to suggest is that the economic impact from the coronavirus may well be contained. But that is to assume that factories are going to be opening up again next week. The prevailing sentiment around the world has been that when we look, for example, at the Chinese CSI 300. It pulled back really very sharply. It has rebounded back above the trend mean in here today. That's not least on the back of really quite significant monetary and fiscal stimulus and the relaxation of regulations in China to support the market. They are essentially pulling out all the stops. What we're also seeing is some opportunism on behalf of the Chinese corporate sector to take advantage of force majeure. And that is particularly relevant when we look at, for example, natural gas prices, where the LNG price is significantly below what long-term contracts would be pricing at. And the ability to declare force majeure is something that is going to certainly be of assistance to a number of Chinese companies. A lot of people concluded that the new year was the worst time to have the coronavirus strike. But there is an alternative way of looking at it, and it is that, yes, there was a mass migration ahead of the New Year holiday, which it happens every year, and that's not, I guess, the best time to have an outbreak. But it's also a time when the vast majority of businesses close for a prolonged period. China tends to have golden weeks, and it just closes down absolutely everything except restaurants. So they extended the golden week. It's also a time of year when a large number of people change jobs. When I've seen examples where a factory might have a couple hundred employees, and after the New Year holiday, only five or six came back, and then they had to scramble over the subsequent couple of weeks to replace those workers. When workers get a better offer somewhere else, or they have doubts about the ability of management to continue to run the company, then they just vote with their feet and go off and find a different job over the New Year holiday. So the big question now is whether people are going to be able to get back to their jobs, and how difficult it is for a number of those businesses to restaff. That's the big question. We won't really have an answer to it for about a month, because there's a friend of mine with a garment factory here in Los Angeles, and he buys his fabric from China. He was opining yesterday that usually it takes them about 2.5 weeks after the end of the New Year holiday to get back on track in terms of production. So we've had a somewhat longer New Year holiday, and there is a level of anxiety in the corporate sector that we haven't seen over the course of the last few years. There are a number of businesses that have had to shut down. Hyundai is one of those in South Korea. But the bigger picture here is that there are travel arrangements being delayed or cancelled. There are people starting to think about whether they should be going to trade fairs or whether they can simply get customers to come visit them. And all of these types of things are very short-term responses to a short-term challenge. The big question is about the communicability of the Wuhan virus. I continue to think that this is one of the best graphics I've seen. It was produced by the New York Times about a week ago, and that shaded area gives us a very clear idea of what the realm of the possible involves. But the most important factor is that the left-hand scale is in log scale. So the difference between the mortality rate from a seasonal flu up to SARS is 100 times relative to just a rather small move on the chart. And there is the potential that the Wuhan coronavirus, which is similar to SARS, we should really be calling it WARS, is probably going to be upwards of 30 times more fatal than the seasonal flu, but potentially as communicable, at least as the common cold, but potentially as communicable as, for example, polio. Those are the major unknowns. We don't know exactly how deadly it is, but the much more one thing I've definitely seen is people opining on what the mortality rate is, but not opining on how communicable it is. How contagious is the disease? Is it similar to the flu, or is it similar to the common cold, which is more communicable than the flu, or is it substantially more communicable? Is it going to represent somewhere in the middle of some really major killers and extremely inconvenient diseases, or some of the less killer and less communicable diseases? It's very likely to be somewhere in the middle. And that does represent a challenge. So we are certainly seeing, for example, that the S&P 500 has continued to move higher. And it was in additional positive territory in here today. And this week has been a really very impressive upward dynamic. And the NASDAQ index pushed on to a new high yesterday. It wasn't quite able to hold it because of the volatility that we had in Tesla, but it was able to push on again to new highs in here today. So one thing that we certainly know is that the 10-year yield is below that of the S&P 500. And the real potential here is that investors have pretty much got the message. We're 10 years into a bull market advance, and the pace of the advance is picking up. And the reason it is picking up is because we have the clear rationale that interest rates are low and falling, that there is going to be abundant liquidity for the foreseeable future, and the only way to value the stock market is relative to the bond market. And because yields are so low, then we can justify continuing to buy stocks, regardless of exogenous factors elsewhere. Well, the wild card here is inflation, because it's certainly a discussion Mrs. Tracy and I were having last night. It was, her business is going to run out of inventory by May. How are we going to stretch the inventory and continue to hold on to the Amazon's Choice designation? Well, with Amazon's Choice, you have to continue to supply Amazon with inventory, or you'll lose the designation and one of the competitors would pick it up. Then you've got to work very hard to try and retain it. And that Amazon's Choice designation represents a bump of about 30% in sales. So it is a material impact on whether you hold it or not. Well, the easy answer to ensure that we do continue to hold inventory or enough of inventory is to raise the price. You might get a dip in sales, but perhaps hold on to the designation because of if that lack of inventory is affecting us, it's probably affecting competitors as well, and we're going to get a move upwards in pricing. And I wonder, are other businesses having the same conversation? Because a lack of supply generally represents a rise in price. And that's directly inflationary. So that is something that is not being considered by the bond market at all. I do think, therefore, that it is an inflationary shock is something that could eventually derail the accelerating trends that we're seeing. I think that we are now very clearly in the third psychological perception stage of this really major bull market, which is characterized by often acceleration, but most particularly mania. One thing that I did see in here today is that the major ETF houses are now starting to get into private equity. Private equity is already a very crowded space, and the competition for the most promising projects has been really very intense. And because there is such demand for projects, the vast majority of private equity funds have to settle for second and third tier assets, which really does mean that they're paying over the odds for assets that aren't worth a fraction of what they paid for them. And they can do that because interest rates are so low. There is a very significant swathe of the market is extremely exposed to the interest rate cycle. Now, we also have central banks that are very clearly willing to tolerate higher inflation. In fact, that is their most desirable situation. They want to be able to erode the outstanding quantity of debt. And we've had a meaningful pop on the upside by 10-year Treasury yields, although they were pretty much unchanged in here today. But the one thing that we certainly have is the clear potential that inflationary pressures are likely to rise just because of the impact of the coronavirus. I'm skeptical as to whether the short, sharp pullback and quick recovery that we saw with SARS is going to be repeated with wars. And I think that's one of the most less understood and perhaps something that is not being priced into markets right now. But we continue to see that there is positive news coming through on the potential for a vaccine. There was a lot of work done on Ebola, which is also a coronavirus. So some of that can be redeployed into this virus. There is the potential that we are probably going to see the end of this spread of the virus by the end of perhaps the middle of the year. But there's still probably going to be about 20,000 people die from it. And that suggests that things are probably going to get worse before they get better. And what that also suggests is that the continued advance that we see in stock markets is predicated on continued monetary and fiscal stimulus. And I think that's part of the reason why gold prices continue to hold the $1,550 area. It's also supportive of the view that silver is offers some catch-up potential. Palladium, on the other hand, being much more of an industrial metal, is losing consistency here. We're getting a number of downward dynamics within this range. The range has gone on a little bit longer than other ranges. It's been a little bit wider, larger, but not especially larger than some of the other reactions. What it does suggest, we have a peak of at least near-term significance. Then when we think about the copper price, it's continuing to rebound. It's not displaying an ability to hold intraday highs, but it has been able to eke out additional advances on a day-by-day basis. But when we look at it on a weekly basis, we can see that there it's quite a dynamic move from the $2.50 area and confirming support in the region of the 18-month, the lower side of the 18-month range. So I think there's potential here that we are going to see some additional upside in the copper price. The oil price was in negative territory in here today. It's continuing to hold to the breakdown, but it's also pausing around the $55 area. Russia has asked for more time in deciding whether it is going to curtail supply. There might be the ambition there of trying to pressure some of the shale oil producers and drive some of them out of business, and in doing so try to capture greater market share for OPEC and for Russia. But the length of time that they can survive with low energy prices is something of a big uncertainty. But this weakness we're seeing and the inability of oil prices to rally, that also helps to highlight the fact that Saudi Aramco has already IPO'd, that they have reached the conclusion that the best of the oil market is now behind them, and that there is a clear rationale for oil prices to go sideways for the foreseeable future. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.